children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Do 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 do.
Hello and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And you might have noticed we've had a little delay starting tonight. We've had all kinds of computer and electronics weirdness. And you know, some days are just like that. My whole week has been like that. So not such a big surprise. Anyway, before we get into our interesting topic tonight, which is really going to be fascinating, let me first say that our sponsor is Hydramay Skin Nutrition. You can find their products at www.hydramay.com. That's HYDRAME.com. And it's all natural, all organic skin care, skin nutrition. And they have products for men and women. Just your skin just shows up. So it's pretty cool stuff. Please give that a try if you haven't, and it's reasonably priced. Okay, now tonight we are going to have some interesting stuff going on, as if we haven't already. We have Patty Greer on tonight, and her movie has won all kinds of awards, and it's 2012. We're already there. So welcome to the show, Patty Greer.
Thank you very much. It's actually 2012. We're already in it.
Oh, we're already in it. Sorry.
That's okay.
And we're already there, too. So 2012, we're already in it. And unfortunately, I didn't get to review your DVD yet because it hasn't made it to me in the mail. So you're just going to have to tell us all about it.
Well, I'd be happy to. And, you know, it's a funny week for mail. I've never lost mail before, but this has been an interesting time where a lot of mail is definitely kind of having a mind of its own.
Yeah.
So apologies, yes.
Well, you know, I think it's just a symptom of all the stuff that's going on. I'm sure you had a lot of insight on that with all your crop circle work that you've done. And so I'm really anxious to get into that. But before we do that, if you would give the listeners a bio, you know, tell us about you and how you got into this fascinating field that you're in now.
Ah, well, I was a musician my entire life. I played harp and piano and sang and wrote songs, and I, 5 years ago, decided to have a small harp rather than this huge concert grand with organic strings that I've hauled around for 30-plus years. So I bought this beautiful little harp with great sound. It had synthetic strings, and within 6 months, probably, it had unknowingly to myself destroyed my fingertips. I don't know if it was the fluorocarbon or the whatever something. There was toxicity in the synthetic strings. But I shredded my fingertips and went down pretty hard. And this was 5 years ago. It never crossed my mind. And I continued to play in Band-Aids until all of a sudden my Band-Aids were catching the strings, and it hit me to start listening to my body. So when I realized how bad my hands had gotten, I had to quit entirely. And it took me probably about a year to get over the devastation of losing my career and the ability to touch anything. I literally lost the use of six of my ten fingers. And it was extremely hard. And it wasn't just on the physical level. It was on every level, because it took me out of my life. Whenever you meet somebody, they shake your hand. And my career was hands. And when you, you know, when you love someone, of course you want to touch them. And all of a sudden, I mean, basically anything I touch would break my skin open on the fingertips. So I stopped touching things. Yeah, it wasn't fun. But the interesting piece of all the surrender, which probably took me over a year, was that I realized that if I couldn't use my hands for a while, what could I use? So I started walking everywhere. And I hiked and I walked all over the city. I lived in Boulder, Colorado. And then I moved to Denver and walked all over Denver, and I figured, I've had enough of this. So I'm going to walk. I may as well go to Europe and walk Europe and be somewhere I haven't been. So I traveled overseas and dragged a suitcase, which was not easy with my hands, and ended up in the crop circles. And the very first year I went to the crop circles, I will barely go into because I know we only have an hour, but it was just a one-day out with my daughter, exploring the crop circles, and I knew that day that there was something beyond anything I had ever experienced. And it was raining, it was cold, and we were out in the farm fields, and somebody had told us where a particular formation was, and we were actually taken by one of the ladies in Glastonbury who I had just met. Turns out she's the Archdruidess of Stonehenge for over 20 years. But we had just met at a store, and she said, I'm going to a crop circle tomorrow. You can follow me. So my daughter and I follow her to the crop circle, and she's got another lady in the car, and it's so rainy that most intelligent people would stay in the car. But here we are. We're in England, and so we hopped out, and we went walking down the tram lines, which are where the tractor tracks are, and the wheat was up to our thighs. I mean, it was tall and wet and raining, and we're heading toward what we thought was a formation, and all of a sudden, every ounce of my being lit up. It was like goosebumps from head to toe. My head was tingling, my nose was tickling, and something was going on I had never experienced. So the formation all of a sudden opened up in front of us, and here we are in a field of wheat, and there is this meticulous artwork in a flawless circle right in front of our eyes, and you could feel your heart pounding. There was an energy in it that was not like anything I'd ever experienced before. So that was my maiden voyage, and because I had my daughter and I needed to respect her desire to travel rather than be a cosmic monkey like her mom, I knew that the following year I'd come back and take it seriously. So that was 2006. In 2007 and 8, I was in the crop circles for 9 solid weeks each summer with my movie camera, my still camera, and I just couldn't come out. I was in heaven. So the best of it, of all the crop circles in the world, are in southern England. And the most interesting thing is that within a 10-mile radius centering in the Avebury Stone Circle, are most of the great crop circles that are documented in all the world. Such as last year, we had maybe 153, I believe was the count. 73 were in England alone. And by far the largest, greatest, most dramatic crop circles you have ever seen. All summer long, this year they were Mayan, and they were intense, and they were three-dimensional masterpieces. And when you photograph them from the airplanes, you really see the dimension and the pattern and the intention of the circle makers to not only lay the wheat, but to have centerpieces in the center of each circle that are like bouquets. And it's stunning. It's absolutely stunning. So there's those of us that are in the fields going around and examining, for instance, the corners, the edges. When you first go in the formation, everybody has their method. The gentleman that I usually go with, he goes immediately down on his knees and he's digging through the edges to see if all of the bend at 90-degree angle are broken or if they are meticulously laid. And the broken ones would typically mean that people with boards and strings had come through. But the ones where there's no broken bend, it's the most amazing thing because all of those 90-degree angles or a variety therein have not a bend in the wheat, but an extension of like a bubble right where it bends. So something has actually heated the wheat and bent it over, and it happens in an instant. And all of them, side by side by side by side, are like perfectly combed hair. It's the most remarkable, meticulous, immaculate thing you've ever seen in nature.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't actually seen one up close, but I imagine that the energy when you walk into one must be pretty incredible.
If you're willing to be sensitive, it is out of this world. And I think it's really a matter of if we choose to be open to the energy. Because the veils we know are thinning. Those of us that are doing the work, listening to the information, allowing ourselves to be really present with what's going on, we're getting so much more information now because it is that time in our history.
The door well, and I love the way that you titled your movie, too. We're already in it. You know, that is something that, you know, everybody keeps waiting something, and it's like, no, it started a while ago, you know.
Right.
We are in it. And it just is amazing. I've seen some of the Mayan crop circles that people have taken photos of, and perhaps they were your photos, I'm not even sure. But I remember looking at that and thinking, you know, that's so amazing, because the architecture, you know, when you're dealing with something that's a sacred geometry in the first place, you can make a piece of simple sacred geometry like a cube out of sticks and stick it on your head, and you'll feel a difference immediately. And I can imagine being in the middle of one of these circles where they are completely meticulous about how it's made, and I'm presuming that all of the sacred geometry is precise and everything else. That must be a totally amazing thing. And I do know that more and more of us are being challenged to have something to do with the sacred geometry beyond the Merkaba, you know, that Dronvalo had brought out, and, you know, lots of us have done the Merkaba meditation and all that kind of stuff. But I'm thinking that we're being pulled to really work more with the sacred geometry than ever before, maybe because we lost so much of this knowledge that they had back in the ancient times.
Absolutely. And we see these geometric patterns in all the pyramids, in Egypt, in the Maya lands, in the glyphs, even in South America, where we've got the Nazca lines. We're seeing sacred geometry that's been laid for thousands of years. And nobody can really claim creating these ancient symbols, but now we're starting to see them in the crop circles. For instance, this particular summer, 2009, there was a formation that came down in three different phases. And by that I mean it came down, it was this magnificent grouping of swallows. It looked like the birds that we see regularly in the formations. A few days later, the formation was bigger, and it had this bizarre strings coming out the base that looked like a form of writing. And then the third phase, when it came down, this formation was the most remarkable thing, in my opinion, I've ever seen, 1,500 feet long. And finally, somebody dissected it, and it took days for somebody to come up with it, that it was an ancient code that was pre-Egyptian even. And this was an entire alphabet of an ancient language laid in a field of barley, flawlessly. It was remarkable. So these sacred symbols, the sacred geometry of the crop circles, happen to be the first physical manifestation of information that the ETs are giving humanity, something we can actually see that's a direct communication. There's no doubt in my mind that they are coming from a higher source. And again, each person has their own opinion, but when we look at these patterns and realize that in that crop field, it was standing wheat last night. Today, it is laid 2.25 acres. There's no way humans could do it, unless they had a team of maybe hundreds of people. But the fields are monitored. We have so many, actually not that many compared to the people in the world, but there's typically somebody sitting on every hillside in Wiltshire, England, where most of this is happening. Almost every night, there's a few of us on most of the hillsides, because typically the same fields get hit year after year, such as Eastfield, which is in Alton Barnes, right in the center of the crop circle zone. The summer I was there last, 2008, there were three formations in the same field. So the pilots, when they take us over for the flight route, they have particular ways that they go, and typically if there's going to be a new one that came down last night, we'll see it in the circle of where they go. And only once in a while do they happen outside this 10-mile radius. And what the radius is centered around is the largest stone circle in the world, and it's called the Avebury Stone Circle. Have you heard of this?
Yes, I have. I haven't been out there, and I'd love to go someday, but I have, of course, heard of that, and I was just going to ask you that question.
Well, the Avebury Stone Circle is not only the largest stone circle in the world, but it's also, and not a lot of people know this, sitting over a meeting of three underground streams. So these three streams coming in from three different directions meet under the center of the Avebury Stone Circle, which has been a ritual site for 5,000 to 7,000 years. And it's this beautiful, beautiful, huge megalith stones that are as deep below the ground as above, and they're made mostly of quartz. I believe it's 70% quartz, which we know is a transmitter of communication.
Yes.
So we've got these huge stones, we've got the water below, and then as we look at a map of all the ley lines of this area of England, there's Glastonbury, the ancient medieval town, to the west, the Avebury Stone Circle in the middle, and slightly to the east is Stonehenge. So when we see a map of the ley lines of all the sacred sites and their connecting lines, these crop circles are typically falling on those ley lines.
Very interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the high 90 percentile of these crop circles, when they go down below and do the research, almost all crop circles are sitting over an aquifer of water.
Wow.
So we've got something happening from above that's a very high instantaneous heat that lays the heat down in combination with water below. So I know that both have something to do with each other at the same time. And thus is the miracle of the crop circles. There's something to do with the water below that's creating the instantaneous drop of the wheat.
Very interesting. You know, I'm just wondering as you're speaking, I'm wondering what all kinds of measurements they take out there. Magnetic frequencies. Are they taking, the aura pictures? I have seen some of the infrared pictures that they've taken. I forgot which crop circle it was, but they had a photo of two lights like appearing and then making like a door, and a creature popped out. And it was like, wow, that was really amazing, and it happened very quickly. And so I'm just wondering if there's some kind of resonant field imaging detector or something that they're using out there to see what the different frequencies are in these circles.
Well, it's a wonderful circus of researchers, and all of us come with our tools. I personally am about the feeling, but I also always have my pendulum, and my pendulum is a telephone to my guides. So when I have questions, I feel like I have answers. I turn around, there's somebody else that's got a pair of dowsing rods, and they're going in and out, in and out. And the rods will, of course, open and close just perfectly. And then there's somebody else who's got what you're talking about closer is the magnetometer that is measuring the electromagnetic energies. And they are also going in the field, out of the field, and the rate goes down. They come back in, and the meters go up. So there's definitely a much higher frequency, a higher vibration, and a higher electromagnetic field inside the formation. So sensitive people such as myself, I can feel it 30, 40 feet. If I'm walking up, it's like, woohoo! I just light up. I mean, I can totally tell. And there's only a few that I went in 2007 and 8 where I went, there's nothing going on here. I feel nothing. And typically I'd be with one or two other people. Sometimes I would go alone. It was an interesting journey where I would never want to speak with anybody from the minute I got near the formation because it's so experiential. You don't want distraction, and you certainly don't want to be talking. But again, I speak for myself. Some of the formations, there was a cluttering of all the people from the Netherlands and the tour groups, and blah, 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 blah. You know, they're all, it's a very exciting, illuminating time, but then you go into the next circle, which it's a barrage of circles. You're almost like in a maze. And when you're in the first circle, which is, they can be 60 feet in diameter. You think you're in the crop circle, and then all of a sudden there's a teeny little path, and boom, there's more circles, and they just go on for days.
Wow.
So some of them are round, some of them are triangular. Some of them go like an arrow. Some are like a bird wing. And when you're on the ground, it's more about the feel and the meticulousness and the masterpiece centerpieces that can be just gorgeous. And also, as you're walking through, if you're a slow explorer, sometimes the wheat is even woven and braided. It's remarkable. Remarkable.
Now, I think I had read on some of your stuff that, was it yours or something else I was reading, where they talked about how there are certain circles you walk into and you immediately get nauseated and get headaches. Have you had anything like that going on?
I heard other people have that happen. I only felt a little sickly in one, and I still remember it very clearly. And it was actually 7707. It was when that beautiful formation came down in East Field that opens my first movie, my crop circle movie. I was up in the air in a plane, and I got a great shot of this particular field. And for some reason, because it was 7707, as well as the following year, 8808, we all sat on the hill at night. We knew something was going to happen. So there was a big team of researchers. They had cameras in cars at the bottom. They had cameras on the top. I think they had four cameras total. And sure enough, at 4 a.m., boom, there was this blast of light in the sky, and it threw out two of the cameras. But about, I think it was 30 minutes later, when the sun just started to rise, sure enough, they could see the beginning of this beautiful formation in the early morning twilight, or sunrise, and then it was this fabulous formation. And so a lot of us went into it. I personally, I just trust my intuition. It was one of the only ones I did not go in for the whole summer. I loved seeing it from the hill. I flew over, took lots of photos, and then we had this big press conference, because it was such an astounding thing, and somebody got it on film, and we were all witnesses. So we go over to the meeting hall, and while we were there, people had experienced that some helicopters had come over and dropped some pink powder on the field. I don't know what that was about.
Wow.
But all I know was that the following week, a lot of people got sick that went in the formation. Ooh. I never went in it. I had a feeling, but there is that interesting element, which I won't elaborate on because I don't talk about the helicopters and the government. I don't like to talk about it, but there's definitely an interaction where they prefer, is a polite way to put it, that we stop going in the crop circles. They prefer that we don't share this information with the world because they like the fact that somebody I talked to yesterday said, oh, you're kidding, yeah, I read about them years ago, but weren't they made by those two guys in England?
Yeah.
I mean, people were told this 11, 12, 13 years ago. Now, Doug and Dave, very famous because they came forth and said, hi, we're making all of them in the world. But, you know, Dave's been gone 11 years now, and people are still buying that. That Doug and Dave are still making the crop circles because the press really did a great job. So the fact that there's almost one every single day of the summer in 2007, 8, and 9. There's something going on.
Yeah, there's no way that any humans are going to run out and do that every single day. I mean, it would be a hell of a difficult venture. Plus, how are they going to get that bubble at the bend and weave the grasses also? That's not a human thing.
It's pretty remarkable. It's not a human thing. And the interesting piece is that the ones that are actually tricky from the air, because these guys that are making some of the good ones that can fool us, well, you know what? These guys are being divinely guided to. So bless them and thank them. But, you know, they are just a teaspoon compared to a gallon of what goes on. And even those days when they were saying Doug and Dave are making them, well, gosh, they sure traveled fast because there was one in Germany and one in Italy that very same night the two came down in East Field and Oliver's Castle. So the interesting piece, though, is how well it's been debunked, that most people really don't even ask questions anymore. So I'd like to mention my favorite site that shows every documented crop circle in all the different countries is called cropcircleconnector.com. And they list all the crop circles. You can go on and go to latest circles, and they will show you every month of all the years. You have to pay a little bit if you want to see the archives of previous years. But it's astounding to go on that site and just peek at a month. I mean, people will be stunned. And when you go to the field reports and realize that this isn't just a few inches of wheat laid, this is acres of a masterpiece of art, you got to know that this is not normal. And we do know by the farmers and by the pilots that it wasn't there yesterday. It's 2.5 acres laid today. It is not humanly possible, unless the teams were massive. But because the hills are being watched at night by all of us, crappies, sitting on the hillsides watching for the balls of light, because we all want to have the experience of seeing the balls of light lay a field down.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all of our goal. So in 1996, one man actually got footage, and his name is John Whaley. And he was awakened by that sound that everybody describes, the very same sound, which is like almost a scratching in the wheat. There's like a wind, and then the din of sound of the crickets and the birds and the wind blowing the wheat that's all around you. Everybody has said the same story. It goes silent. All those sounds go away. And then all of a sudden there's this weird, like a buzzing in the wheat. And all of these people had a telepathic communication between some kind of energy that they couldn't see, but they could definitely feel. And a few of my friends actually had a physical, visible sight of a ball of light. Charles Mallett, who owns the Silent Circle, which is our research center, tells a great story on my first movie, which is The Wake-Up Call, Anybody Listening? And he explains it. He's done this for years. He's always going out at night because he wants to see the balls of light in action. So he's in a circle. Mm-hmm. It's late in the day. And all of a sudden, right in front of him is this ball of light. And it's lighting and dimming and lighting and dimming. And he said it was almost like a radio dial that turned on and off. And he was just astounded, and he just sat there staring. And he said it wasn't 6 or 8 feet from him. It was something he'd looked forward to his whole life. And all of a sudden, maybe a minute or so later, it faded away and disappeared. And only in that moment did he realize that he had his camera hanging around his neck, and it didn't cross his mind for a second to hit play.
Uh-huh.
So here's this guy who's like the expert for all of us, and what happens, though, that everybody talks about is that when the balls of light, which are a higher vibrational energy, we feel it's almost like a satellite off a mothership that's out of our visible spectrum. Mm-hmm. But when these balls of light are in the presence of humans, typically the human can see, feel, think, but they're semi-paralyzed where they can't move or scream.
Hmm.
So it's very exciting, but it's also very frustrating because people can't do anything such as push play or say, hi, my name is, you know. They're left there in silence. And it's so astounding that it could be that they're in shock. But what we're told is that there is some kind of paralysis that happens so that the interaction can have flow rather than a huge fear factor. And then the communication shuts down.
Well, that's interesting, too. As a person who's had lots of ET experiences, you know, I always think, you know, when I'm standing there talking with them, it never, ever occurs to me to ask them any questions. It's like, you know what's going on. It makes perfectly good sense. And then you get out of the whole experience, and people go, well, did you ask them this? Did you ask them that? And I'm like, it never occurred to me to say anything to them. It's like they told me X, Y, and Z, and I said, okay.
So you feel like you've been on the receiving end rather than a co-communication.
Yeah, although I do communicate with them more in the lucid dreaming state, but when I'm actually there, like when I'm out of my bed standing outside in my bare feet in the middle of the night, not knowing how I got there, and I find myself talking to a creature that's humanoid, but not, you know, human, obviously, then it's like, you know, we're having a conversation because we're members of the same team, and I know exactly what it is that I have to do. And so, you know, they'll say something to me, and I'll say, okay, and then I'm back in the house, and then I think I've just dreamed it, right? Until there's some kind of proof, like, you know, leaves and twigs in the bed, and, you know, little things like that where you kind of go, oh, crap, it was real.
Because
otherwise, I just tend to think it's an astral visit, you know? And, yeah, so, I mean, that kind of stuff has been going on for a long time. And I find myself, you know, as you're telling me this, I'm thinking, I don't know, I think that really we know what this is. And I think that that maybe what people are feeling as a paralysis is not so much anything that's like a mechanical paralysis or some kind of ray that does it, but maybe just because it has something to do with our connection. Because, you know, when you have some of these spiritual connections, you actually, I've got something, this is weird, I got something interrupting here. That was strange. Anyway, it's like you have this this connection, this communication that happens, and you're partly out of the body. You know, you're in the body enough that you're having the experience in 3D, mm-hmm. but part of your consciousness is not in the body; it's out, which it usually is anyway. But there's like more of your consciousness is elsewhere in the non-local mind or something. And so you're having this conversation. You could probably be standing right next to 10 other people who wouldn't see this being because right. they're not vibrating at the same frequency.
Exactly.
And so I tend to think of what really happens, and I don't know, this is just my conjecture, that what really happens is you do raise your frequency enough so that you can communicate, but it's not enough so that you can move your physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And well, for those of us that never think about communicating, it kind of raises another question, like, maybe I should bring a list.
Yeah, right. Well, we had a gentleman, Bert Janssen, from the Netherlands, who went with a group of people, and he was talking about this very thing, which is this a one-way communication? Or can we communicate with them? Mm-hmm. So he sat with a group of people, and they came up with a symbol, which was the Maltese cross. They had a photo of it in the center of a table. They went to a pub in England, and they sat around drinking wine, and they agreed that they were going to create in their minds, the three of them, and set the intention for this Maltese cross to show up in a crop circle.
Mm-hmm.
So they sat there, and they did their ritual, and 2 days later, that very symbol showed up in a crop circle in a line of five of them, in a row, and it was identical to what they had sketched.
You know, I remember hearing about that.
It's actually
yeah.
in my movie trailer because it's such a remarkable story, and he's a great researcher. He's done movies and books. Bert Janssen, he's been, I believe, in the crop circles 20, 30 years now. So there's these wonderful, loyal people. And over in England, where I consider myself, they consider me in the front line, which is the people that are there first thing in the morning, day after day, because we want to be in the circles before the tour groups, which are not very many mm-hmm. people still, but before people go and walk on it, because there is such a feeling first thing in the morning when they're just fresh. And it's just such a high-powered energy. And again, what is the message of the crop circles, and what does this have to do with 2012? Because here we are saying we're already in it. And what we're in is this transitional period. And 2012, yes, it's an end date. It's the winter solstice. It's been predicted by the Mayans and the Tibetans and the I Ching and the Egyptians as the end of a calendar period. And all the spiritual people are saying it's the end of time as we know it, but certainly not the end of our lives. Mm-hmm. The scientists are saying the planets are going to shift in every 26,000 years, you know, and all the seas will rise. And, you know, there's all the big 2012 movie, everybody's going to die, the world's going to fall apart, blow up. And then there's the astronomers talking about the sunspots mm-hmm. affecting our electromagnetic field. And this is an interesting one that I watched somebody else's movie recently. Whereas our Earth is surrounded by this pulsing electromagnetic field, and they show it as this icy opal-like blue field that pulses at a particular rate, and they stated that the human body pulses at a matching rate. So So we are working with the planet as one. And the only thing that could change that pulsing electromagnetic field is if the sun starts throwing these rays down that are going to break holes in this electromagnetic field or change the frequency of certain areas. It's going to affect all humans at the same time as well if there's some major global effect from the sun coming into our galaxy. And then the bodies, all of us, are going to have to recalibrate to match that new electromagnetic field. And I'm not a scientist, but it certainly makes sense when we think of our heartbeat. And when we run, and we run hard, our heartbeat goes faster. And so our breath has to catch up with it. Well, as humans on the planet, you know, if we do have these big shifts, it's going to affect everybody.
But
as we talk about the secretion in the pineal gland, which is going to make people have this, it's been said, this moment of hallucination before we go into the ascension of the new paradigm, which is where all of humanity will raise consciousness at the same time. This is going to be the effect when that electromagnetic field shift happens. It's going to affect people in the back of the brain all at the same time. But again, those of us that have done a lot of work are going to have an easier time.
Mm-hmm.
Those people who don't have a clue what's going on and why they're hallucinating and, you know, all of that are going to be in possibly a panic. So the light workers are really being called to action now. And we are multiplying and we are really raising our own vibration so that we can affect so many people and help everybody do the movement at the same time. But on so many levels, the shift is happening and we are in it.
Absolutely. And that was really brought home to me as I went through my stuff with my vehicle this week and having it go dead twice for no good reason that I could figure out and with a new battery. So I just kind of went, the guy that came along to jumpstart the battery for me the first time, I looked at him and I said, "You're a healer." And he goes, "You know, people keep telling me that." And as I talked to him, I said, "You know," he said, "I don't know anything about this stuff." And I said, "You don't really need to find anything out. Just understand that, you know, when things get kind of weird, your healing stuff is really going to come out, you know, and just realize that it's okay. And, you know, there's lots and lots of healers on the planet now and more every minute, because they're all going to be needed with all these changes, and mainly because of the people who have not prepared, you know, their minds won't be able to handle the destruction of their illusions, you know. So there's going to be a lot of us that are going to have to, you know, take care of these people that literally have their minds blown apart. And in those of us that have been working with the energies and such, you know, it's like it's just such a joy to be in an area with the sacred geometry. And I mean, I would love to go into a crop circle and see what that feels like, because, you know, having sat in a man-made circle of sacred geometry many times and combining different forms of sacred geometry that are man-made with copper and, you know, gold-plated steel and, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And also sacred geometry is made with laser light. I can tell you there definitely is a huge difference, and you definitely do have communication with other dimensional beings, whether they're interdimensionals or tridimensionals or ETs, I have no idea. I know they look different than us. And I know that they can affect us, and they do help us. They help us with healing. They help us with suggestions. They may even be what we call angels for millennia. And, you know, all this kind of stuff, it's part of our heritage, and it's who we really are, and it's time to really embrace this. And I'm so excited that you made this movie about this, you know, to help get the idea out there for people. So hopefully we don't have too many people whose minds get blown. But, you know, hopefully, you know, that's one of those things that's really going to help people to wake up and to start to go, and really, that's all I'm asking for with people is give me the you know.
Yeah. One
start
person
thinking
at a time.
Yeah, just start thinking about it.
Well, the interesting piece for me was that I was a musician. I never thought about making movies, never crossed my mind, never had an interest. When I laid in that crop circle in 2007, that first time I laid down, not the first time in the rain, but the following year when I went with the intention of not leaving, that first formation I laid in, when I lay down, closed my eyes, had a very relaxing but strange sensation. I opened my eyes a bit later, and I saw things moving above me like I had never seen before in my life, in the air, as bold to my eyes as the mosquitoes that were swarming above my face. And
wow.
These things that were moving through the air were like circles with a circle inside, almost like a flying donut. Some of them were clear with a clear center. Some of them were clear with a dark center. There's no doubt in my mind, I knew I was seeing something that I had never experienced. Whatever they were, I just watched them. And because they were showing up really visibly in that day in the crop circles, I started sketching them in my little journal that I had with me because it was such an unusual experience. I also saw things in the shape of like a worm that looked like an oil slick moving through the sky. I'm rubbing my eyes. I'm thinking, what on earth is happening in my vision? And I knew it wasn't blood vessels, dust. This was really something that I was seeing, and I figured this is something that you can experience in the crop circles. Wow, is this great? So every day I would see them in the crop circles. Every day I would say to people, check this out. Start looking at the sky with me, and I would take them on this journey of how to see it. Almost everybody saw it. Everybody saw it. It was great. So at the end of the summer, I come back to Denver, Colorado, where I was living. I'm in my condo on the 10th floor, downtown Denver. Ambulances, buses, cars, terrible air. And I'm sitting out on my deck thinking, oh, God, I miss England. Thank God I've got this movie to edit so I can bring back all these beautiful accents and stare at the crop circles for days and just make a movie out of it. So as I'm sitting out on my deck in Denver, all of a sudden, there they are. Schools of what I think is plasma energies moving right by my 10th floor deck in downtown Denver. I gripped my chair. I thought, oh, my God, it's not just the crop circles. The veils are thinning on this planet, and I can see these things everywhere. So
you
I went
know,
to a spiritual seminar in Phoenix. I took people out on the golf course. Everybody saw them.
I have some pictures of what you're talking about. And actually, those pictures were taken back east. But yeah, some very, very interesting things that are just appearing in the air. I mean, I've got pictures of all kinds of stuff, mainly because I'm working with some sacred architecture stuff made by a quantum physicist. And so I totally understand what you're talking about, because we are able to see these things more because they're what's real. And I started realizing there are certain photographs that I take. When I take them, I see it as gold light, and when I blow it up, it turns green, and it looks just like a printed circuit in a computer. And I started realizing, oh, my gosh, this is showing that the matrix is dissolving. And so what we're doing is we're starting to see through the matrix, and we're starting to see the things that really do exist in our worlds. And maybe to understand that we're actually functioning in many different bodies in many different dimensions at the same time.
Amen.
And maybe, you know, other parts of ourselves think this is old hat. But these parts that are here where we think we're conscious all the time, they're just kind of getting woken up to it, and it's just fascinating. Now, did you see these things before you went into the crop circles?
Never.
So it really, really increased your vision and your sensitivity.
Well, I believe, yes. Now that I'm 2 years down the road from there and I've made 3 movies, full feature films in 2 years with no experience or training or even the desire to do so, these movies have made themselves through me. And because my hands are still in Band-Aids, a couple of them, I work in gloves and Band-Aids, and I hold the camera, and I am driven to go to the right place at the right time it was phenomenal how every day I went to the Wright Craft Circle and there'd be another brilliant researcher there, just like me, in the mood to talk on camera. And these movies just made themselves. I did most of my filming in the crowd circles or in the stone circles. And the first year I went, when I had this experience, I mean, it was the second year, literally, but I just started taking, after that day, and seeing the plasma beings, I started taking a ridiculous amount of photos. And it was just a cheap little camera, a Canon PowerShot. The best thing you can do is buy a cheap little camera, because those are the ones that pick up the orbs, the light bodies, the light beings. And so I'd be up at 4 in the morning, lucid dreaming, and I'd be told, go to the window. I'd take the camera, start shooting outside, and I have the most interesting chapter in my crop circle movie about the light beings over Silbury Hill at sunrise. I couldn't believe the shots I got. So I'm just taking tons and tons of photos, no idea why, other than, wow, this is cool. And now I'm at 1,100 photos. So I went over to Glastonbury to the first crop circle symposium I had ever gone to. All the great researchers from different countries are there. And that's when it hit me, or something took me backstage to find the film crew, and I hired them to come and do an entire day with me a week from now so I could pick all my interviews. And I created the movie in a 12-hour day with the film crew and months of editing back home and these 1,100 photos from the ground and in the air. And the movie, because I hadn't read about crop circles, is completely experiential. And because it really was kind of came through me, it's like really raw passion. You know, the people that I interviewed are not the snooty little scientific experts, but rather the people that are singing as they speak, and they've got mud on their knees and mud on their boots because we all just crawled out of the crop circle. And it's a really neat cluster of people because they're pioneers. You know, they're people that you got to not care about the judgment you're going to get from the rest of the world, because the world that I used to be in 5 years ago, my life, I call it BH, before hands. Mm-hmm. And after hands. And my hands are back. I'm almost back to human with my hands. But I know that the 5 years of being taken out of my life served my ascension growth in a way that nothing else could have, because I was really into my life. I was busy. And I think busy is the worst thing we can be now. Mm-hmm. What we need to do to see the beings that you see and to see the plasma that I see, people say, how do you see it? Here's my answer. I stop and I look.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it takes. But people don't stop. We're so busy being busy and being mm-hmm. in a hurry or being late or needing to make money, and, you know, that we forget the magic that's going on.
Absolutely. And, you know, I can tell you that the times that I have really seen something or really gotten a revelation, like I did when I was looking at these photos where you see through the matrix, and it didn't occur to me for quite some time what it was because I was busy. And then I got sick. I got the swine flu. I got it twice, you know. And, of course, because it's the flu. The flu mutates. So, of course, you can get it more than once. That's why vaccines are ridiculous. But anyway, I was sitting there. I was so sick that I couldn't even watch TV. Now, that's pretty sick, right?
That's pretty sick.
Yeah. Couldn't read, couldn't watch TV. I was just absolutely miserable. And I was sitting there, and I was looking at my computer. And for some reason, I started flipping through some of these things where I have the matrix showing. And I'm looking at it and looking at it, and all of a sudden it occurs to me, oh, my God, I'm looking through the matrix. I'm seeing the computer itself.
Hmm.
And the reason that other people that get the gold lights coming off of these red laser things, so supposedly it's impossible, right, because red laser can only be red, but I've got all kinds of different colors off of that, and other people can photograph the gold light, but when you blow it up, there's no matrix in there because they don't know that we're in the matrix. And because I've been near death so many times and been on the other side and had all these wacko experiences, you know, I'm quite aware that we're in the matrix. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I'm able to photograph that and to see through it. And so I would expect that you're going to have some even more interesting photos and videos that are going to happen because you've allowed yourself to be open and you're communicating with these beings on some level, and you're saying, hey, look, and you're helping other people to see this stuff. So I am real excited to see what you're going to get next. Mm-hmm. I haven't even seen what you got yet, but, oh, but you know, it's looking pretty interesting.
Well, my three movies have been an interesting journey, and to have a full feature film every 6 months come through me has been something where it wasn't until about 3 weeks ago where I unplugged my hard drive, because I'm on my fourth movie now, which is going to be really exciting. And I said, I'm editing 15 hours a day. I have not come up for air for 2 years. Yeah, really cool. I've made three movies, but I need to laugh. I need to stop editing. I need to maybe go on a date, maybe remember to cook something. You know, I mean, I'm eating raw, but it's basically I grab an apple or some yogurt and I'm right back to the computer. I'm mm-hmm. so hooked on the information. And when my friends say, God, get out of your head and go watch a comedy, it's almost torture to do something boring because I feel like almost a slave to data now. I'm like hungry for more all the time. Mm-hmm. It's really exciting. It's an exciting time. And with the rate at which we are evolving as a species and each one of us, it's just a super exciting time to be really open and really listening. So mm-hmm. my first movie is called The Wake Up Call, Anybody Listening? And that's the Crop Circle documentary. 6 months later, I'd finished it barely a month, and I went online to see where do you show a UFO movie, and I found the International UFO Conference, which is a convention that meets once a year. It was their 17th year in Laughlin, Nevada, and 600 or 800 researchers come in year after year and meet, and the greatest lecturers that are speaking, there's like 10 a day. It is 14 hours a day, the thickest pile of information on UFO realities you could possibly swallow. And the first event I went to was 10 days long. So I called them and I said, I've got a Crop Circle movie. You have a film festival. They said, oh, you missed the deadline by a month, but the guy that owns it loves Crop Circle movies. Send it to us anyway. So I sent it, and they called me 3 days later. And he said, I love your movie. You missed the film festival deadline, so I'm going to throw a Tuesday lunch and show your film. Come to the event. And so cool. It opened this whole new door where I was like, how can people be this nice to me? So I get down there. A Tuesday afternoon, I meet J.J. Hertog, his wife Helene, Donald Schmidt, who wrote the Roswell book, everybody who's anybody's there, Stanton Friedman, Dr. Lear, all the guys that are on CNN all the time, you know, all the big rock stars of UFO research are in uh-huh. one building. We're all sharing the same hotel. My God, the roof's going to fall off or the ships are going to surround the hotel. It was just phenomenal how many brilliant people were speaking. And then breakfast, lunch, dinner, you go in the restaurant, you're cross-eyed, like trying to figure out who's who because you know there's nobody of average intelligence. Mm-hmm. I've been so honored to be a part of this family. So as I was walking out the door to go to the event to show my first movie, my dear editor says to me, I know you. You're going to go down there and want to film people. And I said, yeah, I figure I'll, you know, bring in a film crew from Las Vegas and just pay for it. He said, nah, here's my new camera. Take it with you. You can do it. I was like, you're kidding. Don't hand me a movie camera. I wouldn't know what to do with it. He said, this is the front. This is the back. It's on auto. Go, girl. So I filmed my second movie by myself. After rehearsing, zooming in on the bed, the lamp, and the TV, I lifted my head, put that baby around my neck, hung it on my cleavage, and went out into the party. And I interviewed 30 unbelievable people, and wow. That's my second movie called UFOs, ETs, Abductees, and Brilliant Minds, The Wake Up Call 2. And because I didn't have a microphone and I used my knee as a tripod, technically, it's not excellent, but the mm-hmm. information, I actually just watched it yesterday for the first time in maybe a year. I was stunned. It was almost like seeing it all over for the first time. 30 different people lay out the most phenomenal stories. I'm sure you could have laid out quite a story because it sounds like you've had many experiences. But by the time I left the event, there wasn't any doubt in my mind that a lot of people have been having interactions for many, 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 many years.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I haven't seen ETs or grays. I haven't had surgery. I haven't awakened in a field a block from my house. But I've been in the crop circles for 3 summers, and I have taken lots of time. And I went into the crop circles alone at sunset, completely fearless.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I go out there with all the love in my heart, and I hold my hands up and go, bring it on! Come on, you guys! I came all the way over here. You're making movies through me. You're using me. Come on! Show me your face. Show me your light. And then I'm standing out there going, I'm so sorry. I can't believe I'm asking for more. And it was so interesting being out there with my arms up going, give me, give me, give me more, when I'm standing in a crop circle in England that's fresh as a daisy. My goosebumps are completely up my thighs, and I'm asking for more. And in that moment is when I go, I'm embarrassed to be a human. Seriously, I just have to stop, take a breath, and go, I apologize. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. That's all I have to say. You don't have to give me any more. I've already had my birthday present. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Well, it's all about the experience.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's about the experience. You know, that's the one thing that I really learned from all my near-death stuff. We come here to experience, to do, and to increase God, basically. You know, we are it experiencing itself. And so it has to take all of these different forms and do things that don't seem like they would be good because it's discovering itself, you know. So whatever experience you choose to play is perfectly fine. And like I've had those moments too, like you, and then other times I go take them to task. You know, I mean, I was in the equivalent of a extraterrestrial waiting room one time. I was ticked off, and I'm like doing the equivalent of standing there, you know, tapping my foot, going, all right, who do I have to talk to? This is unacceptable.
Waiting for the doctor.
And a little gray came out and said, well, you can't change your circumstances without special permission. So I said, fine, who do I have to talk to? What do I have to do? And they said, oh, well, we'll go find out. And so I'm standing there waiting and waiting, you know, and then finally they come back and they said, special permissions have been granted. I said, good, thank you. And then I was like, oh, crap, what kind of special permissions did I get?
Be careful what you ask for, you just might get it.
Exactly, that's how they keep getting me to come back here. And and so it's been really kind of interesting to watch all that, you know, and to see things. And people think, oh, well, you know, if you hear, you know, a voice of your guide or your angel or whatever, oh, gosh, you know, that's it. It's like, oh, no, that's not it, because you're in the body, they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's many things that you can have, and it doesn't mean you're greedy. You're saying, hey, you know, I'm ready for more experience. Show
exactly.
me this.
Exactly.
And so what I found the best question to ask, because I deal with this manifestation stuff, the best question that I've ever come upon was basically, show me the next step.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't say what. I'll say, you know, what direction I'm looking at working on. But I'll just say, show me the next step, or what is my next step?
Right. We just open the door.
Yeah.
And I think the most important thing with that is to listen.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have to say that every single time I've done that, I have had things happen that I could never have imagined. Far better and far more incredible than my little puny human brain could have come up with.
No kidding.
And... yeah, and so, you know, I see all these things that are happening now, and I love talking with you about the whole crop circle thing, too, because it's each one of us experiencing more than what has been the normal human experience for the last hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it used to be, if you look in the Bible, you know, the people were walking around talking with angels and talking with God and you know, talking with these other creatures that we think are mythical and doing all these things. And I always wondered, well, how come that happened then and it doesn't happen now?
But it is happening now.
Yeah, it is happening now.
It is
and that's the thing
now.
That's cool.
Yeah. But again, it's only happening to those who listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to be open.
You're talking about mythical creatures, which reminds me of my new movie that I'm working on. So when I went back in 2008 to the crop circles, I finally had my own camera. After I borrowed my editor's camera and learned how to use it without a tripod, without a microphone, I bought real gear. I really stocked myself right with excellent gear, and then I went over to England prepared. And I bought this professional backpack, and all my gear was in it, and I loaded it on the dolly. And then by the time I got in the fields, I realized I'm 5'3". I'm just a little woman, and I loaded the backpack, and I couldn't carry it, so I'm always, like, sitting on the edge of the field, you know, waiting for somebody to haul my gear in. So this last summer, in 2008, I went over there, and I wasn't sure what the movie was going to be. I leave it up to the circle makers. So I went over, and I had my camera, and I wasn't really on a mission. I was just there to have a great summer and say, sera, sera, whatever shall be, shall be. And so my first invitation was to go to a fairy festival in the Cotswolds and meet my musician friend, Nick. So I met him at this fairy festival, and it was a really rainy day, so I left the movie camera. I just brought my little still camera. And I started to get the feeling of the fairies. And I started asking a lot of them, is this your real life? What do you believe the fairies are? You know, and I couldn't tell if it was Halloween or if people really lived the life, but I was kind of fascinated by the fairy kingdom in England. And during the course of the summer, people would take me to places that they would say, oh, mate, this is a fairy glen I've been coming into since I was a child, eh? And so I kept being taken to fairy glens and druid groves and all these sacred sites that were within trees that were in the shape of a circle. And again, it was like that higher vibration where I knew this is not a normal place I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
And so somewhere between meeting a lot of fairy people and being taken to these places that I would film, I also was interviewing a lot of people in the crop circles, and the big buzzword was 2012. So I was starting to ask all these brilliant people, what do you think is coming? And so I wasn't sure if I was doing a fairy film or a 2012 movie. I didn't care. I was just getting amazing people talking to me on camera. And, you know, once you've got the camera and you're the one running it, it's, what, $5 a roll. So that's 80 minutes. I came back with 20 hours of footage. So much information. And what's become of it is that I first made my 2012 movie that I finished just at the deadline to go to the 2009 UFO International Conference this year in February. So I show up at the conference with my 2012 movie, and all these amazing people were there again. It was so exciting to actually be in the film festival. And my 2012 movie won the top award, Best Feature Film UFO Related, at the International UFO Conference, which was a real confirmation.
So cool.
I know. I mean, I called myself the accidental filmmaker. I swear, I'm like the only person with a camera that big without an attitude. I'm goofy. I'm silly. And I dress like a hippie queen from Boulder, Colorado. And therefore, everybody says yes to interview me because I'm not a snob. I don't have an edge. And I'm muddy boots just going, God, is this cool? I mean, I'm like the fun girl in the crop circles. I'm not anybody with an edge. And I think that these are the people that I know I want to draw to me now. I don't know if I'm headed for any fame and fortune with my movies. And sad to say, I've turned down 9 offers for the 2012 movie for distributors and TV stations because nobody offers money. My first two movies, I've had a terrible experience, and I won't say their name. I have distribution for my first two movies, and it costs me so much money every month because he's killed my sales of it's been very not good for business is a polite way to put it. So I have wanted to wait until I find somebody who really believes in my work, who wants to work with me, rather than what's happening today in the movie field is that distributors are pretty much just taking films from us and putting their names on it and giving us just the smallest. From the distributor, I think I get $2 a movie compared to $30.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm spending $30,000 per movie to edit, And, you know, it's been from my heart. I don't think money. I'm not doing this to make a living. But now that I've made 3 movies for almost $100,000, I'm going, oh, my God, where'd my savings go? I need to look at this as a business. And because I'm nose down to the grindstone editing all the time, I haven't really come up for air to create the business aspect because it's not what's important in the new paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
And the new movie I'm making now is an Ascension movie for children called something like The Fairy Kingdom in the New Paradigm. Mm-hmm. And what this movie is that I have been filming all this wildlife all over Colorado and these beautiful speakers in England that tell me, oh, the fairies are really not male or female. They're quite androgynous. You know, it depends on what flower they're on. But the people over there, they know so much about the fairies. So the woman that gave me most of it, Isabel Kingston, wonderful woman, she is the telepathic voice of the fox. And then I have an elk who's another telepathic voice, but I've been filming wildlife all over Colorado, and they just stare at me with my camera. Now, when you're looking at the movie and you see these magnificent wildlife staring right into the screen, it's like, how does anybody get wildlife to stare, to sit so still so long? And it's the same reason as you and I. We stop, we look, we listen. But I'm actually on the other side of the camera, jumping up and down, waving my arms, making funny sounds, singing to them, talking to them. I've got the volume off. But, you know, I ask them to be a part of this. And I know that the circle makers or the higher dimensional beings or the plasma beings, whoever it is that's in the space with me at that time, is really making it so that whatever this information is that we want to feed the children now, not geometry and science of things that they're never going to use, calculus, we should be teaching the children, when you go for a hike, see all those weeds? They're not weeds, they're food. See that over there, that dandelion? You can eat the petals, you can boil the roots, you can make a salad out of the leaves in the springtime. These are the tidbits that we want to teach humanity now, is to work with nature, to be working with the elementals rather than cutting down the rainforests and destroying the oceans with what we know we're doing and the air with what we know we're doing. The ETs, and I know you know this, Dr. Valerie, have the technology to clean our planet for us. But they're saying, we can't do it for you. It's your mess. We can give you the tools, but you have to fix it yourself. Right?
Right, and that's one thing I've been trying to get across to people for a number of years and saying, look, nobody's coming to save us. We have to make the effort. They will help us. But we have to do it ourselves. We have to show that we are spiritually mature enough to take responsibility for our actions and really, you know, like you said, clean up our own mess.
So let's now start looking at these interesting keys that even though we know the governments are doing the debunking, the non-disclosure, the misinformation, look what's happening on TV. I was squealing like a little piglet last night when the Energizer Bunny came on with an Energizer battery commercial, and there was a UFO.
Yeah.
Did you see that commercial yet?
I did. I love it.
Oh, my God. Okay, so our commercials, and even Google, you know how they have different sketches? Google had little UFOs. We've got the new television series V, but we're seeing a lot more things showing up on TV that are allowing humanity to realize the possibility of, why are they showing it to us now? What is the message?
Yeah.
It's starting to really seep in to the general public when we start seeing it on TV.
Yeah, so, and it does have to seep in, really, because, you know, they, well, they've told me that, you know, there is a war on, basically, and it's a war against humanity by people that are really greedy, because we are at that leap-off point, you know, and those of us that came to the planet to do the light work, you know, we realize how vital it is that people really get hooked up now and get ready for the leap, And, you know, there are so many people that are trying to keep things in the old paradigm, and it's not going to stay that way.
No.
You know, this is why we're seeing the collapse of the monetary systems and all of the graft and corruption is being brought to the forefront, because, you know, it's just not going to be allowed. And so people are just going to have to really wake up and start to, you know, behave differently. And, you know, I've been saying for a couple of years now, we can create paradise right here.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to decide that that's what we're going to do and not worry about all this other crap. Yeah, you have to know what's going on and stop whatever you can. You know, if somebody's committing evil acts, you need to stop them.
Right.
But for the rest of us, don't dwell on that crap. You know, instead, look at what we're being given. Look at these magnificent crop circles that are downloading information.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the amount of people now that are talking about having dreams or having visitations with ETs and interdimensionals and angels and all kinds of different beings. Other people that are communicating with the Aluna worlds, as Stuart Wilde talks about, and with all these other dimensions that are so close, and they're actually kind of crossing over now. And, you know, the people that are contacting the bad ones, you know, the shadow people and the stuff like that, you know, I'm like, oof, I make the sign of the cross with my fingers, and I'm like, I'm not going to go there. You know, I'm too sensitive to walk into those nasty places of negative energy. You know, there's no way I want to be anywhere near that kind of stuff, because I want to see the new world. You know, so personally, I want to be able to make that leap and take as many people along as possible so that we can really continue to grow and create. And, I mean, there's so many things that we've forgotten now that our ancestors all knew, like back in the Egyptian times. You know, they used sacred geometry, and they used what they called magic. It was really physics. You know, they knew more about quantum physics than we do. The Tibetan monks have known about quantum physics for, what, 5,000 years? And they laugh at us because we can't do these things that they just do by themselves, because they understand these laws that we're just now starting to scratch the surface on. It's just a fascinating time to be alive, don't you think?
It's absolutely fascinating time to be alive. And, you know, another thing that's really going on now that's bigger than most of us see is the balance of this planet, the male-female energies, which is not man versus woman, but these polarities of our planet that has been more male-dominated. You were referring to the power elite, which is the more masculine, greedy, selfish, deviant energies. These are the energies that we've been dealing with for thousands of years, 2,000 years, they're saying historically. And now that we are at this tipping point of moving into a new paradigm, what's happening is that the divine feminine is rising to the surface. And I don't mean women, I mean the feminine energy of the planet, the love of nature, the love of humanity, the oneness of all people and plants and elemental beings is coming back to the forefront of our attention. And as this happens, the negativity that we are seeing, the greed and the, personally, I'm seeing family and friends robbing family and friends. People are getting desperate. People are doing horrific things to each other. And what this is not really we're all winging out. What it is that the whole energy field of this planet Earth is being cleansed. The negativity is being pushed to the surface to be healed. And I believe that those of us light workers that are planted all around this beautiful globe that we are on, we are like acupuncture points all over the planet. And as we poke our little PowerPoint into the earth, the negativity is released. And unfortunately, some of us are in the way of that steam, so we have to continue to lean back and stay with the flow. And as we see these situations come up, we have to literally look at it as something to step over and move forward. And we're going to see a lot more of it as the socioeconomic situation becomes worse, harder, more people run out of money, more people lose jobs. They can say that things are turning around, but we know really that we haven't seen the worst of it yet. And I want to say things are getting better, because I am committed to the new paradigm being exquisite like you. We have the ability to be living in paradise, but we do have to be bold warriors right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot give in, and we cannot focus on the negativity. We have to constantly monitor our thoughts and always push that meter over into the 51% of, gosh, even if I have to compliment a shoelace, I'm going to find something good about it. Because
well, and the
our
thing,
thoughts,
yeah,
thoughts are creating our reality.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing, too, is, you know, people don't realize that everything is alive. Even the inanimate objects, what we consider to be inanimate, they are actually alive, and you can get them to cooperate with you. So you better believe I was talking with my vehicle today and saying, listen, you know, we got to change the way this is going here. You got to quit being dead every time I walk out the door. You know, it just doesn't work for me, you know.
Your job is to not be dead.
Yeah, your job is to, like, when I put the key in and turn it on, you're supposed to go.
You know? That's right.
Yeah, and so, you know, you kind of, you laugh, you know. I mean, I have so many friends here in Sedona that talk about the car fairies. And I'm like, what happened to my car fairies? Did they all get killed off in my last accident? What happened?
Well, I think it's just to test you. To
yeah.
see how you respond, because you're evolving, are going to be tested.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I know that an hour before my radio show, I got the phone call that I would never want to hear this morning, and it was the strangest thing because it was so different than what I choose for my life that I had to really check in with myself and say, what is it in me that's still finding these lumps on the ground that I have to step over? Because I know that everything I create is something that I am creating.
Mm-hmm.
So all of you light workers in the world that are on this journey with us, man, I got to say, enjoy the ride. Keep your chin up, and really, no matter what is going on, we have to always turn it around to be thinking beautiful, positive thoughts. You know, even in times of the hardest test, we got to find something to laugh about so that we can continue to evolve as a species, no matter how easy or hard it gets, because soon, when everybody has that shift in the pineal gland, and all of a sudden, we don't need the idle chatter anymore because we are all telepathic. That's going to be a great moment.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I had telepathy when I was a teenager. Freaks the hell out of people.
Mm-hmm.
It's really kind of funny. But yeah, and, you know, I mean, we actually have that. A lot of what people call intuitive ability
mm-hmm.
is really kind of a subvocal telepathy that hits you, and you have this inner knowing. But what it really is it's a, you know, it's a telepathy in that you know what that other person is thinking, even if it didn't come to you in words. And that's getting to be more and more now. And so I'm noticing that, you know, I can look at somebody, I know exactly what they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine, you know, and I'm having to tell people, look, it's okay. It's all about the experience, you know. Don't get hung up on it. And, you know, I do some online counseling, and I've had people really going through some doozy of things lately. And I'm encouraging them to, you know, look beyond and to just move on and not spend time, you know, just ruminating about what's going on in life. It's like, let it go, you know. And they say, oh, you know, I miss this person, or, oh, you know, I just really loved this or that. And I tell them, well, no, what you really loved was you loved the love that was there, you know, and you didn't love that person as much as you thought.
Right.
What you really loved was you loved this particular quality in them that you can find in anybody else. And I suggest you go look for it in somebody else, you know,
mm-hmm.
rather than obsessing over somebody that wasn't right for you. Same thing with the job. You may have loved your job, but it may be time to move on. Same thing with where you're living. You know, and so if you just kind of look at those things and go, wow, you know, things will kind of narrow down and narrow down until they kick you out of where your comfort zone is.
Well, I just lived through that, and I have never expected that somebody, that I, would be in such full surrender.
Mm-hmm.
But the sweetness of the surrender, now that I've made it to the other side of the tunnel, is that my new life is all of a sudden, instead of always using my hands and being in the world, that now my mind is awake. And the tricks that I can do with my knees, elbows, and toes, oh, my God, am I gifted. You know, when one thing goes down, you either, you know, whine about all lemons or you decide to make lemonade.
Uh-huh.
And when one door opens and when one door closes, another one opens, as long as you keep your heart open and you stay willing to continue perceiving. And my experience, I mean, I would have never expected to be doing what I'm doing today, and I have never experienced such a deep level of surrender, but what comes of it is a whole new set of gifts.
Mm.
So, you know, to whoever is out there listening, if any of you are having a really tough time right now, know that in the short run, medium, and long run, it ultimately will be a gift as long as you can move through it without a whole lot of resistance and really know that these tough times that we're in and the dishonest people that are really rising to the surface and being really inappropriate are somehow serving humanity by helping it all come to the surface to be released.
So absolutely.
Instead of being mad at the people that are really acting out, we need to surround them with light, to send mm-hmm. them light. Even if we hate them, we want to wish them well, because as they evolve, the planet becomes more free. And these are the people that really need more help than the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
We're on a mission. We're on a beautiful floating ride. It's those that are really trembling and trying to create all this havoc that need more of our love than the people that are having an easy go at it. So we almost need to love our enemies now more than ever, so that as a species, we can fully evolve, because we need to be making big improvements immediately on this planet.
Absolutely. There's no time left. You know, we have to do it now. And, you know, I have so many people that ask me, well, how do I do that? This person did this to me. They did that to me. They hurt me. And it's like, you know what? Forgive them and move on. That doesn't mean that you have to be their doormat. It just means you forgive them and you send them love and you just, you know, just, you don't have to have anything to do with them other than that, you know, but don't hold them back by having these hateful feelings towards them, even if they did something really horrible to you. You know, they did what they thought was right at the time, you know, even if it was evil.
Right. Well, an interesting piece about that lesson is a friend of mine said, hold on to the end of this towel. And I said, what? She said, hold on to the end of this towel. So I grabbed it and she held on to the other side. She said, okay, here's your opinion, and here's this person that really is not honoring you at all. Now, I'm going to drop the towel on my end because he doesn't care anymore. He's gone on with his life. You're still holding the towel.
Mm-hmm.
When are you going to let go?
Mm-hmm.
It's really an interesting moment where I went, wow, when we hold on to that anger with people that are shallow or cruel or missing the point, is a polite way to put it, they really mm-hmm. don't care. It's us that continues to punish ourselves with the lack of forgiveness. I'm guilty of it. I mean, I've had some surprisingly disappointing people in my life. And for me, I don't get mad that, gosh, they're so wrong. I look at myself and I say, what is it in me that would draw this to me? And so when we take responsibility and really get the why, how, and all those answers, then hopefully we don't have to repeat the lesson.
Yeah, exactly. Get the lesson and get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. I've had quite a few of those situations myself. And, you know, it tries your patience, but I'm at the point now where I'm starting to laugh a lot.
Oh, my God! That is so it!
Yeah, it's like you have to laugh because people are just doing everything that their little greedy minds can think of to do. And you can see it. It's so transparent, and you just kind of sit back and you have to laugh at them and go, why would you do that?
Yeah.
You know, why would you do that when your immortal soul is at stake right now? and you know, I mean, do you love this particular crap you're going through enough that you want to stick through it another 26,000 years?
Well, you're absolutely right. And because I know we're getting near the end of your show, what we want to do is to really keep in our minds that no matter what's going on around us, that we have control of what's going on in our own head. And we know that our thoughts, our words, our actions, and our feelings ripple out across the planet from us. With every breath we take, we are not only affecting our lives, but the planetary vibration. So I think the most important lesson that for me in my life right now is to really be conscious in every moment, to choose what I want to be in, to choose the patterns of my thoughts so that I can have a great life.
Absolutely. Because it's your choice.
It's an independent journey.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's all just the experience, too. We are at the end here, so why don't you tell people how they can get a copy of your movie, all of your movies?
Well, my website is pattygreer.com. That's http://, and it's www.pattygreer.com. And like you're saying, your car and all these strange things that are going whack, my website is a little bit whack the last few weeks. Hopefully you can go directly to my website, because I have all my movie trailers available, and you can browse through and see, get a very good idea of the movies. If you can't get on through my website, go to Amazon.com and just search Patty Greer, and you'll find the three movies by the filmmaker. Not the distributor one. Go to the ones that are directly from me. I have 1, 2, 3 movies on Amazon. And between the three, I actually put them in a package on my website called Movies for Ascension. And the collection, if you watch Crop Circles, UFOs, ETs, and 2012, the three movies leave you with so much information that most of your questions, I really do believe, will be answered. I'm not taking credit for the movies. I just held the camera and did a lot of narrating and paid for the editing. But really, I feel so gifted to be a part of this ascension process and to be one of the pioneers that have this DNA download, this DNA reactivation of all these strands that have been asleep for years. I know it happened to me in the crop circles. And I know that every summer when I go back, or when I put myself in a beehive of brilliance, such as a convention of light workers, wherever we meet in large groups, it's such an important time for us to get together with brilliant people, with people that are doing the work, talking about what's really happening. This is how we move our energy more than anything else on the planet, is putting our focus on higher knowing and being in love.
Absolutely. That's a great way to end the show. Thank you. And I just I so appreciate that you came on. I know you're getting ready to go to Australia, and so we kind of had to rush you on in order to fit things through your schedule. So thank you very much for coming on with such short notice. And I'm looking forward to seeing your movie as soon as it gets here. And I will definitely have to have you on and talk about the other movies, you know, when you get back into the States. And let's continue. Because I know that you have some really important information for people to get now. You know, they're so lost and they're so hurting, and they just need some help, you know?
Well, I think we're at a really tough time for humanity, but, you know, the greatest gift, in my opinion, that's happening for this planet now, and it's the most well-kept secret, is these crop circles. But the wonderful thing is that looking at the picture of a crop circle, even if you don't know anything about it, these sacred geometric patterns that are coming into the fields of wheat, barley, corn, even lima beans, they say, they are giving us on a subconscious level the information that we need to evolve. And they're saying that even people that have no idea what's going on, if they look at a photo of a crop circle, they're going to be downloaded information on a subconscious level that will stay with them for the rest of their lives. So even if it's not my crop circle movie, which it should be, go get yourself the crop circle movie and really take your time with it, because no matter what, by the time you get through an entire movie, you've looked at, in my movie there's 100 formations, but, you know, in all the movies there's a good group of them, you will be enlightened by what you see.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And the pictures work just as well as anything. It is a holographic universe. So I definitely encourage everybody to check out pattygreer.com and check out the DVDs. And I think you'll be really pleasantly surprised by what you can feel by seeing these photos and videos. Okay,
and
so that
true.
Wraps it up.
It is true that you don't have to be in the crop circles. You can actually just look at pictures. I mean, I can't believe people are really saying this so steadfast that looking at the pictures of the crop circles, they're saying, is as good as being in them.
Yep. Well, it makes sense to me. You know, I look at the quantum physics of it and go, duh, yeah.
Duh, yeah.
Makes perfectly good sense. So thank you so much for being on, Patty, and have a great time in Australia and all that stuff. And we'll look forward to having you on again and hearing what the new stuff is.
Lovely. Well, all you listeners out there, enjoy the ride and be safe.
Absolutely. Thank you. Okay, listeners, our show has been brought to you by our lovely sponsor, HydraMay Skin Nutrition. You can find them at www.hydramay.com, HYDRAME.com, all natural, all organic skin nutrition. And, as usual, until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.
Awaken the dream, awaken.